Netcasting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney. You're listening to this week's FX Podcast from FXGuide.com.
Thanks for joining us for this FX Podcast. Today, Mike Seymour talks with Michael Taylor, who has just moved into the role as CEO of Rising Sun Pictures, located in Australia. Michael and I first met in Cincinnati. I was at a post house there, and he was working for Quantel. A few years later, I moved to Chicago and ended up working very closely with him when he was visual effects supervisor at Editel Chicago. It was not long after Michael moved to Los Angeles that my wife and I moved out here as well. You'll hear a bit more of Michael's history in the podcast. He's worked in senior management at places like Rhythm & Hughes, Digital Domain, and Riot. So with all the talk about the global business, we jumped at the chance to talk with him as he makes this move from Los Angeles to Adelaide. So let's join Mike Seymour now with Michael Taylor.
So first, let me start by saying thank you, Michael, for joining us. We really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, Mike.
So you're a guy from the UK who moved to the US, ending up in LA, is now moving to Australia. Are you just a serial kind of traveler?
Thought I'd keep heading west. eventually it'll get me back. Is it 22 hours from Sydney to London? I don't know the journey time on that one, but no. The business is changing. It's becoming a global business, and I recognized probably 2 years ago that things were changing, and connections were being made in different countries, and as you know, things are definitely changing.
How did you come to end up at Rising Sun? Was this you'd know the guys for a while, or?
I've actually known of Rising Sun for a while. When I was at Digital Domain, we had an opportunity to work on a project which never actually happened. So I was very aware of the work they do down under there in Australia with Rising Sun. So to me, it was just a question of, a big move. So from my point of view, they're an excellent brand. They do excellent work, combination of, creativity and technology. So that's always a very attractive proposition to me.
So in a minute, I'd like to discuss with you your views on the global film effects market. But before we do that, I just thought we should back up on some of your history, because you have a very interesting past, if I can delve into it. In fact, you at one stage demoed for Quantel, didn't you?
I did. I did a couple of years at art school, then I switched careers into engineering, believe it or not. I went the technology route after that, and ended up working at the BBC in London, and finally was looking to work with kind of new technologies, and kind of fell across Quantel in those days, and actually joined them as a product support engineer, and ended up coming to the States, moving to Stamford, Connecticut, and ended up, meeting companies in post-production and demoing a lot of the equipment they had on the go in those days.
And you actually went from that engineering background to working as a VFX supervisor. Because, I think many people know you, or I know you certainly from a senior management point of view, but
yeah,
very much you're working as a supervisor, weren't you?
Yeah. I was actually hired into Editel in Chicago. They were a large organization in Chicago, New York, and Los Angeles. I was hired in with my kind of technical expertise to work in parallel with the artistic teams and help them understand the technology, and ended up on set in Los Angeles, doing blue screen and second unit. So I've had kind of a varied career when it comes to my career path, and went from being a supervisor to being an executive producer as well. So I've been able to, kiss all those different aspects of the business. And
so which was the first main company you worked for in Los Angeles? Was it DD or was it Rhythm & Hughes?
No, I came to Los Angeles with a company called Encore.
All right. And
if you remember them.
And very good company.
Yeah, they're an excellent company. And I worked for them for a couple of years. And, it was always my intention to move into different areas. But I'd known the guys from DD for a while. And Scott and I had kind of, we'd flirted for a while. And at the right time, well, actually, I went from Encore to be the director of post-production at Rhythm & Hughes, and from Rhythm & Hughes to Digital Domain.
And when you refer to Scott there, you're referring to Scott Ross?
Yes, I'm sorry, Scott Ross.
And so what time was that you were joining Digital Domain? I believe that was around the time they were – was that when they were first doing the major Flame-type workflows?
I actually joined them in 1999.
Right.
And so they had a fairly large Flame division. They were using Flame not only in commercials. I think they had eight systems, or I can't remember the exact number. And they had also Flames in the feature film division as well. So, yes, Flame was very prevalent in those days in the operation.
So if you joined in 99, that was right after Titanic, because that was 98, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I was there post-Titanic, as it were. So,
which must have been a splendid time to be at DD.
It was. It was. It is still a fabulous place, and I worked with many great people and had many wonderful times and fantastic memories from that company.
But post DD, I think you did what, Ascent Media?
Yes, I went and worked for Ascent Media, and that was my last port of call.
So now, at what point did you move from being more in the operating, sort of what you might call creative VFX supervising role, over to what's now obviously a very senior management role?
You know, the transition for me was moving into being a producer, an executive producer. So, you know, I started to deal with more of the business aspect of it. And it was in those days that I really started to understand, you know, management in our field is extremely difficult in some respects. There's a balance between the creative and technology and business. And, you know, my firm belief is that management shouldn't get in the way of the creativity, and we should be the enablers of creativity. And my philosophy.
I believe you managed the Riot Method integration at Ascent Media?
Yes. Yeah, I was part of that. And that was kind of my last duty, as it were. And we actually rebranded the Riot company. We had offices in New York and in LA, and Method had an office in Santa Monica. And we felt, from a branding point of view, it was probably the best idea to collapse some of the brands together. There was overlap, and we felt that Method was the stronger brand to let that happen. So that's exactly what happened.
So tell me, you've got an amazing perspective on the industry from obviously both sides of the creative and the senior management side of things. I was just wondering your sort of general impression of the state of the industry as we head into 2010 and how it's shifted in the last few years.
You know, I think there's lots of opportunity, and I think that from my point of view and my advice to people that are asking me the questions of what's going on is that you have to be mobile, you have to think global, you have to think that, I don't know about the large, vast companies. I believe that, smaller companies are in play right now. I call them Teflon companies. They actually attach themselves to other companies for the duration of a project, and they may uncouple. It's all about specialization. It's all about figuring out what you're particularly good at and driving the creative process and adding value add to what you're doing. As things have become somewhat commoditized in the function of making visual effects, then those are really quite hard to protect from a value add point of view, because if they are commoditized, then kind of anybody can do it. So companies that are able to shine are the ones that are able to bring something to the party, and that only the things that only they can do. It's intellectual property. It's the meld of technology and creativity, and those companies will still be ultimately successful. I always kind of look at my iPhone and go, you know, the IP came from Cupertino. Yes, we know it's manufactured overseas at a lower cost, but at the end of the day, the product would not have ever been enabled without that creative IP that had been added at the start of the process.
So from Encore to Rhythm and Hues, Digital Domain, all of these companies, including who you're heading to, Rising Sun Research, and of course that gave the world CineSpace and other things. Is this a trend? Do you think you're attracted to companies that have very strong R&D and very strong sort of technical backbones?
Yeah, I mean, listen, my degree ultimately is in engineering. So deep inside me, there's a nerd as an engineer. I understand what that brings to what we do. And I believe that, you know, the ability to glue things together, to develop pipelines that are very specific, repeatable, I believe that they are very important. So, yes, I am very attracted to companies that are willing to invest in R&D on all fronts, whether it be from asset management to real sharp-end tools. From my point of view, that's important. I think the studios, especially in feature visual effects, the studios recognize that. They understand it makes a difference in companies, and it's a big discipline.
So you were talking a minute ago about that expertise being commoditized and bringing something to the party. But also another aspect that you must be witnessing or have witnessed firsthand is the dramatic shortening of schedules and the ability for a company to guarantee and deliver in what seems to be absurdly short frames of time.
Yeah, it is in comparison to how it used to be, but this is exactly what's happening. I mean, studios have become driven by, you know, some of the product more and more is being test marketed. They are waiting for the last moment to lock cuts in because they don't know how the picture's going to go, and you know, they're trying to maximize their profit. So I think it's inevitable. I think most companies that exist in our space have to kind of get used to this sort of scenario. And I mean, there are opportunities in it. I mean, it's really, you know, the word kind of post-visualization comes to mind as well. You know, it's kind of what can you do with the imagery after the film has been shot or acquired, and if you're shooting digital, what can be done between that and the final cut that doesn't lock us in completely? We don't spend all our money. You know, we need to save it for when we actually need to do the real work. So, you know, this ability to be able to accurately and quickly and quite frankly cheaply post-viz product and work is becoming more and more important because as the schedules shorten at the back end, what you actually need is vast amounts of firepower at the back end and to know what you're clearly doing. And I think everyone's prepared to spend money that way. It's just a question, how do we do that?
And yet, by way of contrast almost, you're heading to Rising Sun Pictures, who had a great track record with the Harry Potter franchise and I believe are scheduled on the last two films from the last book. And that seems to be a franchise that actually has learnt some lessons and done tremendously well in not rushing projects through and thus have produced just some of the best work we've seen in ages.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I don't think it means that if you're shifting the timelines around, it's going to lead to a product that's substandard. I think it's going to lead to other innovative ways of getting to the visualization before you actually commit to the final renders. Does that make sense?
Yep. Well, in fact, the other thing that I guess Rising Sun is known for is the ability to get the global community to be able to communicate better with things like CineSync. And I'm wondering if you could talk about that globalization, because maybe it was necessity, but certainly we all have to thank Rising Sun for allowing us to have that kind of level of visual effects conferencing that's now almost, I can't imagine life without it.
Yeah, I mean, CineSync is almost de facto now in its usage. And, you know, it depends on the filmmakers too and the producers, you know, where companies that are offshore have to be able to demonstrate to the studios and supervisors and directors that they can work in a remote location in almost a black box scenario, and that does require a certain type of skill set within those companies. It's not as if the supervisor can show up, you know, that evening at 7 p.m. to review some dailies and sit over the shoulder. So I think a lot of these global companies, not just Rising Sun, but companies in London and even Vancouver, have learned how to master the ability to work remotely and take advantage of time zones and tools like CineSync and just be able to move the product along remotely. I mean, I think they've learned all those skills, and this is what we've seen over the last 5 or 6 years where, you know, I would call it the decentralization of feature visual effects out of Los Angeles. It's been happening for quite a while now. I mean, it really has started to roll very, you know, fiercely over the last 6 months to a year.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously there are other companies in this region that have Animalogic and Weta that are obviously working remotely and doing great work.
Absolutely. I mean,
Rising Sun is also somewhat unusual in the Australian market in that all it does is feature film work. It doesn't really go after commercials. Is that something that you see continuing, or do you intend to sort of look at maybe expanding your portfolio?
No, I think the mandate of the company, I agree with the direction that we are a feature film company. It's a directors, you know, filmmakers driven company, as it were. And yes, I mean, that does sometimes make it harder when the cycle changes or when there are dips in the cycle. But I think, you know, commercials and features, they share many commonalities, but they don't. You know, very often, let's say you have 6 to 8 weeks to turn around a high end commercial and, you know, 6 to 9 months to turn around a feature film. Obviously, The from a marketing point of view, the feature film visual effect works often sells a client on for a commercial, but very often they use completely different pipelines, as you know. And I mean, I admire companies that have both, but I think for now, Rising Sun is definitely focused on feature films.
So The advent of digital, I'm wondering how that plays into the two things we've discussed, that globalization and short time frames. Because Rising Sun did terrific work on, say, Superman Returns, which was shot on the Genesis camera. Do you see digital playing much bigger in the... I mean, are we going to see really the transition to almost all digital capture? Where is your position on that?
Listen, I don't want to get into contentious argument, but I've been a firm believer in digital for quite a while now. It's a complete enabler for many production teams that would prohibit shooting film. I think as a distribution, as an acquisition, film still has its place. But you know, I think from a pipeline point of view, the digital really does offer some amazing advantages and abilities to even stretch companies and bring companies in earlier and handle work that wouldn't normally be handled. So from my point of view, you know, thumbs up to digital acquisition.
And Rising Sun started pretty much in Adelaide, has obviously offices in Sydney. Where are you going to be based?
I'm going to be based in Adelaide, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
And so how are you going to work? I mean, will you be involved in the sort of the front line of connecting up with the rest of the world? You know, it's going to be traveling the world doing that, or do you feel you'll be based in Adelaide and then just conferencing and whatever is enough to go out?
No, my responsibility is to grow the company and nurture it, and you know, I believe that that we need a bigger global presence. How that manifests, I haven't quite, you know, we haven't fully decided yet, but I think Rising Sun as a brand is an excellent brand, and it just needs to be known a bit more.
I mean, how big is Rising Sun in sort of, I know it must go up and down with films, but you know.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think in Adelaide they've reached like 150 people, and I think 50 to 100 people in Sydney as well. So it's a medium-sized company right now. And I think the ability to be able to grow it from there is important. And you know, right now we look east from Australia, as it were, and to Hollywood, but I think there's a vast market that's opening up just, you know, west, the Pacific Rim, Asia, India. I think there is a huge amount of growth potential coming from those countries right now. I believe that within 5 years there will be probably a major Chinese or Indian co-star in every Hollywood movie. So growth seems to be, these are my predictions, by the way.
Sure.
Growth and my personal opinions. You know, there is definitely growth in the business overseas. The international box office is growing rapidly, and one of the bright spots of the year. So, you know, from my point of view, we should be looking west as well as looking east.
And so the other one I was going to ask you about, just with your strong engineering background, we've discussed digital, is the advent of huge popularity and interest in 3D stereoscopic work.
Sure.
None of the current portfolio that I'm aware of, that Rising Sun's done, is stereoscopic. Do you see that as playing in the live action market, or is it going to be really just a success in the 3D animated kind of area?
I'm kind of waiting to see what happens with Avatar, to be honest with you. And I don't think
you're the only one.
No. But listen, you know, there's a legitimate filmmaker. Not saying anyone else isn't a legitimate filmmaker, but there is a very high profile legitimate filmmaker that has produced a motion picture in true 3D. So I think the reaction to that will drive what's going to happen in the next 2 or 3 years. But certainly, there is success here in the domestic market with 3D screens in animated 3D movies, and I think the quality ones have got it right. There is some move into taking 2D movies and making them into 3D. I'm not sure about that process, but if it can extend the box office and rejuvenate titles that require that, then all good for that. But I think from a 3D point of view, true 3D filmmaking, if it grows the business, then I'm all for it.
But at a personal level, do you think that live-action films are going to go 3D? Or do you think it's literally as if Avatar's a huge success, we'll see a million of them. If Avatar doesn't go well, we won't?
I can't answer that question. I mean, listen, do I enjoy watching a 3D movie? Yes, I do. But have I really sat down and looked at a serious piece of filmmaking that I would consider a 3D movie? No, I haven't. So, you know, I need to be shown that. And I think that's what we're going to see.
So what is the big challenge facing a medium-level, well-established effects company, a Rising Sun, not necessarily specifically a Rising Sun, but I mean, what are the sort of...
Yeah, it's a dangerous space to be in. I think, you know, what I am seeing is that if you're a large company, then the large companies are going to do well. If you're a tiny small company, maybe in a garage, there is opportunity. I think the challenges come from the medium-sized companies and being able to exist in that space. So, you know, my mission is to grow the business.
I guess from an outsider's point of view, a lot of companies in the mid-size, I mean, excluding the ILMs and those companies like Animal that have set up their own projects that they're, you know,
right,
authoring, there seems to be quite a lot of growth in digital backlot type work for episodic yep. television. Does that interest you?
Yeah, I mean, TV is a particular specialized game, and you know, just like commercial is its own mindset and requires producers and pipelines that suit it, so does television. And you know, I've worked in television. Television can be challenging. It's, you know, it's kind of, you know, you really are on your back heels and got to get it done. I think there is a marketplace for high-end television, such as we've seen in recent years, HBO specials and BBC specials and those types. Episodic television itself and visual effects is quite a domestic market here in Hollywood. And I see lots of growth in the, you know, $2 to $20 million feature films, especially with acquisition in digital. I think that's a huge untapped market that we'll see a big rise in growth and product over the next 5 years.
So if you put 3D and digital to one side, is the effects game itself now no longer that dependent on kit and gear because it's pretty much democratized, or is it still a matter of, you know, because you, obviously you started with Quantel, you saw yeah. Flame at DD. Is it now, you know, not so much about the kit and just getting that talent base?
There has been a definite transition over the last 5 years where the equity is, and any company's equity now falls upon its creative staff as opposed to technology. The technology has become democratized, and, you know, I'm sitting here talking to you on my MacBook Pro, and I'm running, you know, right, not right this second, but I have X amount of applications I could, if I had any talent, I could do the work. But that's the key to it. I mean, you know, it's like bad desktop video is bad desktop video. So, but given to the right hands, then it makes a big difference. And, you know, just being able to shoot with a digital camera and enabling people to do that, it's phenomenal. And yes, I, you know, what we've managed to do is move a lot of the technology off the desktop and into the network and into disk and into storage. So the investment hasn't gone away for serious companies. You know, if you're going to do 1,200 shots on a motion picture, you're not going to do that. You know, there's a certain amount of default infrastructure you need to keep in place, and I think studios understand that as well. So the tools at the artist's fingertips have become somewhat less cost, but I think that's, you know, that's moved, that spend has moved into the backbone.
Well, look, we want to thank you so much for taking time to talk to us. We know you're incredibly busy at the moment, and we, you know, am incredibly enthusiastic to see what you do with your time at Rising Sun Pictures. It's a great company with has contributed, as I say, very heavily to the effects community, and something that we all appreciate. So thank you.
I appreciate it, Mike. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mike and Michael. I wanted to take a second to thank everyone who took the time to send comments on the interview I did with Scott Ross. I got many emails, Twitters, and comments on the story, and that's always appreciated. Your feedback is always helpful. If you have ideas for stories, of course, we'd love to hear those. That'll do it for this podcast. For my co-conspirators, Mike Seymour and John Montgomery, this is Jeff Huser. Thanks for listening.
Please let us know if you have any suggestions for stories or future podcasts. You can reach us by using the Contact Us links at the top of the homepage. This podcast is copyright 2008 FX Guide LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the expressed written consent of FX Guide.